I'd like to call the meeting to order. I'd like to welcome all the public out there. Yeah. And with that, I'd like the clerk to call the roll, please.
Commissioner Ashajian.
Here.
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Clark.
Here.
Commissioner Waso.
Here.
Commissioner Neely.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger.
Here.
Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Chairman Kruer.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. With that, I'll go back to staff to ask a report on any changes and any other announcements on procedures today.
Good morning, commissioners. There are three changes to the agenda. On page number 22, agenda item 6C, which is the City of Crescent City application, has been postponed. Also on page 22, item 7A, the appeal under the name of Park has been postponed. And then lastly, on page 22, item 8A, Reclamation District 768 has been moved to consent. And I'd like to just mention to the public that is here that if they wish to speak to the commission, they'll need to fill out speaker slips and give the slip to staff. The table also contains some addendum items for today's agenda and a binder with the previously published and distributed staff reports for today's agenda as well. And we remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones. With that, I turn it over to Ms. Hanch.
Good morning, commissioners. I wanted to spend just a minute today updating you on our budget, and at the commission meeting in either September or October, I'm going to give you a very detailed report. But we're in that difficult time of the year where we have three budgets that we're working on at the same time. The closeout of the fiscal year 06-07, we're now waiting for the legislature and the governor to finish the work on the 07-08, and we're submitting our proposals for the 08-09 budget. We're in the process of closing out this fiscal year and reconciling our budget, and I wanted to let you know that this is a very difficult time for all of us, and it's a time, too, when it's starting to become very clear that some of the ways that we tried to save staff when we had past budget cuts by cutting our expenses is becoming very, very difficult. When we have five-day commission meetings like this, additional travel, we get to the point where we get to the end of the year and we don't have enough money to make ends meet. So this year we're going to have a little bit more strict work on our budget, in the sense that every month I'm going to need the help of all staff and all commissioners to submit their travel expense claims on time. This year we had several commissioners and members of the staff that submitted travel expense claims for the whole year and the last day. And there's no way we can budget for that. So today I did hand out for you the summary of how you file travel claims. And I'm pleading with you all to submit them right after the meeting. It's easier for you, too, because you don't lose the receipts. And we can keep track of how much money we're spending. The other thing we're doing is compiling all the commission meeting costs that we've had. A summary of that for the last 4 or 5 years, and we'll go over with you the locations that are more expensive and get some feedback from you about how to cut costs on commission meetings. But we'll do that at a future meeting, but I just wanted to give you a little heads up on that. And as far as the budget that we're waiting to be signed by finished by the legislature and signed by the governor, it has two components in it that we're hoping stay in the package that the governor signs, and that is $150,000 augmentation for the live web streaming. We previously received $100,000 from the legislature for that, and $150,000 is in the long-term proposal for the legislature to send to the governor. Our actual contract is $160,000 a year. If that is vetoed, we're going to have to curtail the web streaming, and it's a great service, and we don't want to do that. So I wanted to let you know that's in the package that has made its way through the legislature and should stay in the budget that goes to the governor. The other is an augmentation of 3 enforcement staff, and our hope and belief is that that should stay in, and we hope the governor will not veto those 3 positions. As far as other things that might happen in this budget, the budget bill that is now being considered by the legislature does include a provision that's across the board with all agencies that allows the Department of Finance to make cuts to balance the budget during the year. And in the past, that provision has been used, and we've had major cuts in the middle of the year. So I wanted to sort of give commissioners an alert that this is one of those years where we could have cuts any time during the year. And I know Commissioner Schallenberger, with her experience with the legislature, she knows that does happen, and it's something we do have to be concerned about. Then for the budget change proposals, we call the BCPs, that we're submitting for fiscal year 08-09. Those have to be submitted as a draft in August and a final in September. At the staff level, we believe that what we have to do is focus on getting our operating expenses back to a level that we can really have enough money to travel and take care of the commission meetings in a way that we get to the end of the year and we're not in a deficit. If we don't do that, we're going to have to cut staff. So I have the support of the resources agency to push those proposals forward. So we're trying to do that. That the other thing that's coming on the agenda today is the fee increase. That's very important to the legislature, that we raise our fees and so that they can see that we're contributing to the general fund to help offset those costs. And we'll get into that in more detail in a few minutes. And that's all I really wanted to say about the budget today, but I will be giving you a lot more detail in the future.
I have a question for staff, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Blank.
Ms. Hanch, can we get copies of the budget? Just an email with as proposed? Just an email with a spreadsheet would be great. If the legislature has it, I think the commissioner should have a copy.
Well, as soon as the legislature passes it,
that's not what I asked for. As proposed.
You asked for?
As proposed. We submitted a...
We don't submit... Well, I can certainly send you the governor's budget.
Great. That would be great.
And...
Just
yes.
As submitted for us. I'm sorry if
okay.
I could be very specific, and then I could see at the end of the year what we got.
I'll be happy to do that.
Great. I don't know if anybody else would be interested.
Does anybody else want to?
We did give the commission the budget in January.
Right.
But I'll be glad to give it to
you. I'm
you
just
again.
Curious. That's all.
Commissioner
Thanks.
Schallenberger.
2 things. Just a point of clarification for Commissioner Blank. It isn't. You probably know the governor submits a budget in January, it gets revised by the legislature, then the governor submits a second budget in May, and it's an ever-moving target until it's actually signed. So
I appreciate it. I just would like to see the work in progress.
I'm not sure it will give you much information that's useful until it's actually signed. But what I really wanted to say is for the commission, I, as you know, had the pleasure of working with staff in all of our budget hearings. And in both houses, and it didn't surprise me, and it won't surprise you, but I just want to let you know what a professional job they do and how well respected they are. And it became clear in both houses that the budget situation of the commission is understood by many of the legislators who on the budget committees. And so it wasn't the inability to get even more augmentations was not in any way a reflection on the work done by staff or the information they provided. it was more a reflection of the situation of the financial situation, you know, condition of the state. But it was really a pleasure to work with them and to see the level of respect they have and the connections they have and the access they have. And so I think they do a fine job representing us. And given the way the state of the condition of the state right now, it's really quite phenomenal that we have any augmentation at all. So I thank them.
Thank you for those kind words, Commissioner Schellenberger.
We thank Commissioner Schellenberger. She's been extremely helpful. All her experience in the legislature is enormously enormous benefit to the commission.
Well, don't give her too many accolades yet till we get the money. If we don't get the money, it's her fault, you know. So, Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, staff just sort of stole my thunder. I did want to say that because we do know on the commission, those that were here the last couple of years, that Commissioner Schellenberger has been very instrumental in helping with the augmentation. We appreciate that, Mary. And I know we're going to get into the fee topic, but one of the questions I'm going to have, and coming from local government, because we raise fees too, counties do, cities do. So we're familiar with that process. What I really want to understand when we start to talk about this is why is it and how can we in the future proceed to get a proportionality of those fees back directly to the commission? Okay, and for me, it's not acceptable to say, well, it isn't done that way, because that's past and that may be present, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the future. Okay, and if it takes getting the right legislators on board, if it takes getting the administration on board, I think there are commissioners here that can help with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Any other comments on this? If not, go back to you, Mr. Merrill, and let's talk about the North Coast District.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll first just point out that we have a number of handouts for you. We distributed packets to your hotel rooms last night, included the pink deputy director's report, an addendum for item 6A on the Daniel application. And then this morning I distributed to the dais a couple of different letters that we received by fax, including a letter from Tommy's Marine Service concerning the Daniel application, and then a one-page letter from Chris Rawl concerning the Reclamation District 768 application, item 8A. The pink addendum contains one permit waiver for a lot split submitted by Coast Seafoods, which was required by the commission as a condition of approval of a permit granted to Coast Seafood Company a year ago for their operations on Humboldt Bay. The condition required that 50 acres of owned tidelands be conveyed as open space protected from development in perpetuity, and the lot split is the first step in accomplishing that. We are aware of no opposition to this item, and we recommend that the Commission concur with the Executive Director's determination to grant the waiver. So through the Chair, I'd ask whether there are any questions or objections to this item.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. Would you repeat that? I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I'm just indicating that for the waiver and the pink addendum, we're just asking through the Chair if there are any comments or concerns.
No. Is any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, Commission concurs.
That brings us to the administrative permit application on the agenda, which is the application by the Simpson Timber Company to repair 1,700 feet of eroded levee protecting their facility along the eastern shore of Humboldt Bay. The perimeter levee had been badly damaged by an unusual storm event in December of 2005. And so in addition to seeking authorization after the fact for the emergency repairs that were done pursuant to an emergency permit, the application is also seeking authorization for repair of five other portions of the levee. The executive director approved the permit on June 22nd. The commission's regulations provide that unless four or more commissioners vote to remove the item from the administrative calendar, the permit will become effective. If four commissioners or more do vote to remove the item, then the approval would be revoked and the item be scheduled for a hearing at a later meeting. We're aware of no opposition to this item as well and recommend that the commission concur with the staff's determination to grant the administrative permit.
Any objection to concurring with the staff's determination approving this? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
As I noted at the beginning of the meeting, there is one North Coast item that's been moved to the consent calendar, which is item F8A, the permit amendment for the Reclamation District 768. And for the benefit of anyone in the audience who might be here for this item, the item will now be heard as part of the consent calendar, where the hearing will be limited to the issue of whether the item should be removed from the consent calendar. Should the commission determine not to approve it as part of the consent calendar, the item will just revert to its regular place on the agenda for a full public hearing. This permit amendment is a request to amend a permit granted several years ago to the Reclamation District for long-term maintenance of their levee system along the north shore of Arcata Bay and Mad River Slough. The amendment would specifically authorize major repairs to be conducted this summer in response to damage from that same storm that I mentioned earlier that affected the other project. They're receiving substantial funds from FEMA and have a large project to conduct. We've received one comment letter, the letter distributed this morning from Chris Rawl. The letter suggests that the item should be removed from the consent calendar so the commission can have a hearing to consider whether public access would be appropriate. Staff doesn't recommend that you remove it from the consent calendar, as the commission is really limited in its ability to require public access with this project. The proposed amended development is for repair and maintenance of a pre-Coastal Act levee system, and because it's not considered new development for purposes of Section 30212, Section 30212B5 excludes these repair and maintenance activities from coastal access requirements unless the commission were to determine that the activity will have an adverse impact on lateral beach access. The project is not adjacent to any beach, and there's no public access to the levees now, and so we recommend that you not remove it from the consent calendar and not require access, because there appears to staff to be no nexus between the project impacts on public access and requiring access. Therefore, we recommend that upon the close of the hearing, you adopt the staff recommendation for approval with conditions by voting to approve the consent calendar.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of the consent calendar.
Been moved by Vice Chair Neely and seconded by Commissioner Kinsey, or Commissioner Kazian. The maker and the seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call on this? Hearing none, the consent calendar is approved.
Okay, that brings us to item 6A, which is the application.
We have no speaker slips on this, just for you to know.
Thank you. The project involves the construction of an approximately 2,000 square foot house with an attached 588 square foot garage and associated improvements on a 2.8 acre home site on a 20 acre parcel off of Cane Ridge Road east of Big Lagoon. I do want to spend a moment just mentioning this project because it represents a departure in the commission's dealings with projects in this area in the past. Cane Ridge Road is an area of deferred certification. It wasn't certified in part on concerns over how to protect the habitat for the western azalea, Rhododendron occidentale, which commission has generally considered to be environmentally sensitive in past permit actions. The western azalea is not protected under state or federal endangered species laws as a rare, threatened, or endangered species, but the azaleas are a favorite among horticulturists because of their variety of flower colors and shapes and their striking beauty and great abundance in many parts of the Cane Ridge area. Since the commission denied certification of the LCP for that area, the commission's approved at least 8 different homes and other development with conditions that would act to protect the azalea habitat wherever it was found. But recently, questions have been raised as to whether all western azalea habitats in that area should be considered as ESHA. The azalea, as I mentioned, is not listed as a rare and endangered plant. It doesn't have listing status on the California Native Plant Society Rare Plant Program. And in addition, in many locations, the plant appears as an understory to Sitka spruce forest, where the magnificent variety of color that you find in other places just simply isn't present. What we're recommending is that the commission find that while in many locations on Stagecoach Hill, Cane Ridge, the western azalea does constitute ESHA, in this particular location and others that may be similar to it in the future, where there are only small isolated patches of western azalea within heavily forested areas, that they do not constitute ESHA. And therefore, we're recommending that the Commission approve the Shuttleworth applications with conditions, even though approximately 37 individuals of the Western Azalea species would be displaced by the development. We've arrived at this recommendation based on a thorough analysis of whether the azalea habitat meets the definition of ESHA in Section 301.07.5 of the Coastal Act. And as you know, this definition sets up a two-part test for determining an ESHA. The first is whether an area includes plants or animals or their habitats that are either rare or especially valuable, either because of their special nature or role in an ecosystem. If so, then the second test asks whether the plants, animals, or habitats could be easily disturbed or degraded by human activities. If it meets all those tests, then the area where the plants, animals, or habitats are located is deemed ESHA. In this case, with the Western Azalea, we've determined that the plants are not rare, as the species variety is found distributed throughout the North Coast, the Klamath Ranges, and southwestern Oregon. However, we believe the Western Azaleas are a species that is particularly valuable because of its special nature as a unique vegetation type. The Stagecoach Hill Azalea Preserve is a 42-acre park owned by the State Parks Foundation that is managed specifically to promote and enhance the Western Azalea habitat. And according to the Commission's ecologist, Dr. Dixon, the azalea habitat at the preserve is unique and special for several reasons. First, the sheer expanse of the azaleas in the area is unique and impressive. And second, the dominance of the Western Azalea in the vegetation structure of the habitat is unique and potentially rare. Park management activities remove competing trees and shrubs, which allows the Western Azalea to thrive. And for that reason, the staff believes that the azaleas at the Stagecoach Hill Azalea Preserve are especially valuable because of their special nature. The plants are also easily disturbed by compression of the soil around it and by the fact that they easily hybridize with other rhododendrons. So they meet the second part of the test, too. Thus, conditions are present on many places on Stagecoach Hill where the Western Azalea could be determined to be ESHA. But as I mentioned before, the circumstances at the applicant's project site do not give rise to the Western Azalea as ESHA. It is the 37 individuals of azalea plants that are found are interspersed among Sitka spruce forest. The plants are not particularly expansive. They're not particularly robust in their flowering. And Dr. Dixon's concluded that there's no apparent basis for saying the habitat on this project site is especially valuable. And as mentioned before, they can't be considered rare. So therefore, we're recommending that the Commission approve the project. We do, however, have conditions that are designed to protect the azaleas on adjacent areas where it may be considered ESHA. To avoid cross-pollination with these plants that are easily hybridized, we're recommending a condition that limits the planting of rhododendron species to only the Western Azalea that's found on Stagecoach Hill. In addition, we have conditions that prohibit the planting of any other invasives to prevent them from outcompeting the azaleas in the adjacent areas. And we're recommending that a deed restriction be recorded that would reflect these restrictions on the deed for future owners to be aware of as they purchase the property. So in conclusion, we recommend that the Commission approve the project as consistent with Section 30240 and the other policies of Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act. And the motion to adopt the staff recommendation of approval is found on page 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. With that, do we have any ex parties starting on my left? No ex parties. We have no speaker slips. So with that, I'll go to Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 1-06-032 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Been moved by Vice Chair Neely, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. The maker and seconder asking for a yes vote and passage of this motion will result in the approval of the permit as conditioned and adoption of the following resolutions and findings as contained in this staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Vice Chair Neely?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Akajian?
No, sir.
Okay. Commissioner Wan?
Just a quick question. I left the addendum in the room. Can you just... What was the significance of the addendum? What change was made?
Well, there wasn't an addendum for this item.
Oh,
that's
okay.
For the next
okay,
item, Daniel.
Right.
I just have a quick question.
Yes, Commissioner Blank.
Can staff help me? We're logging the two-acre site to clear it. Is that correct? 2.8 acres?
Yeah.
There's a logging permit involved, an under-three-acre logging permit involved there?
They are getting an exemption from the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection for the logging. The coastal development permit application as well would authorize the removal of the trees in the 2.8-acre building site. It's a 20-acre parcel altogether, and the logging is limited to that area.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, it's unanimously approved. The commission approves the coastal development permit as for the proposed development and adopts the findings and set forth in the staff report. Okay.
That brings us to item 6B, which is the Daniel application. Mr. Daniel's seeking approval for the after-the-fact replacement of 8 10-inch diameter wood piles with 12 8-inch diameter steel piles and the seasonal installation of a floating dock comprised of 5 4-by-20-foot wood floats moored end-to-end. The project site's located on the Noyo River, approximately half-mile upstream from the Highway 1 bridge near the city of Fort Bragg. There is an addendum for this item, and it contains certain additions to the staff recommendation to respond to correspondence received July 10th from Mary Weaver, who represents some of the adjacent property owners. The comment letter is also attached to the addendum. And in addition, there's the three-page letter from Tommy's Marine Service, which I was faxed today and distributed to your stations there this morning. The primary issue raised by the project is the project's conformance with the wetland fill policies of the Coastal Act. Staff is recommending approval based on the fact that the boating use is a permissible use of fill under 30233 of Chapter 3. The design of the dock, with its very small 4.2 square feet of structural wetland fill for the piles, involves the least environmentally damaging feasible alternative. And with conditions that would limit the use of treated piles or floats, staff believes the project would provide adequate mitigation. The letter from the adjacent property owners raised three main contentions. And first is they contend that the piles that were replaced never actually did exist. Secondly, they are concerned that the boats that would moor at the new facility would block the channel if tied up side by side. And finally, they raise concerns that fish and game approval is required for the project. With regard to whether a dock previously existed at the site or not, we've spoken with the Harbor District and with the applicant. They present information that suggests that the piles were there. Whether or not they existed at the site does not make a difference with regard to the staff's recommendation. The staff report analyzes the consistency of the dock with the Coastal Act as if it were a new project, not as a maintenance project where the applicant would have the automatic right to perform maintenance. As I noted, staff believes the project, even as a new project, is for an allowable use under 30233 of the Coastal Act and meets all the necessary criteria. With regard to the issue of the boats potentially blocking the channel, staff is adding a condition through the addendum that would prohibit mooring boats side by side at the dock and mooring more than two boats tied up end to end. And we feel that with this condition, it would ensure that the boats mooring at the dock would not encroach into the navigational channel and would not become a hazard or impediment to other boat traffic on the river. And finally, with regard to the fish and game approval, as described in the staff report, the applicant submitted correspondence from Fish and Game indicating that no fish and game approval would be required. Based on that letter, we did not include a condition requiring submittal of a fish and game approval. I do note that if, for some reason, Fish and Game were to change its determination and ultimately decide that a stream bed alteration agreement or other authorization is needed, the approval of the coastal development permit would not in any way relieve the applicant from the obligation to obtain such authorization from Fish and Game. So in conclusion, staff believes the project, as conditioned, is consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act, and we recommend approval of the project by adoption of the staff recommendation as modified by the addendum. And the motion to adopt the staff recommendation is found on page 3 of the staff report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. I'll open the public hearing. I see there's a speaker slip for Mr. William Daniel. Are you here to answer questions, or do you like to approach and speak to us? Okay. You need to speak into the microphones, sir. Come on. Mr. Daniel? You need to put the switch on.
It's on.
It's on. Speak into the microphone. Do you wish to speak to us today, or
just
do you hear for questions only?
It's working now. I'm here to answer questions. I really don't have any statements to make. I'm kind of concerned about the people that wrote letters and said that there'd never been docs here before. Mr. Huckins has only been there about 5 or 6 years. The other letter is from a man that has been there for many years. However, they furnished you a picture, which I think is kind of neat. Evidently, they didn't look at it. But if you count the boat docks from left to right, between boat dock number 5 and 6 in the Morning Basin, if you look across the river, you can actually see the dock that used to be there. And I talked to Mr. Abernathy here about 3 weeks ago, who put that boat dock in, he thinks around 1963 or 62. And the piling were quite in bad shape. And I ended up losing the docks during the flood that we had here about 2 or 3 years ago because the piling were so bad. So what I did is I replaced steel pipes over the existing wood pilings that were there. And I believe we put in 2 new pilings just to make sure that they were in good and sound. And if you have any questions, sure, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you for coming here today, Mr. Daniel. Thank you. And if there's any questions, we'll ask them.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll close the public hearing, and I'll come back to Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 1-06-045 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Vice Chair Neely and seconded by Commissioner Schallenberg. They're both the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the following resolutions and findings as contained in this staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Vice Chair Neely?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the staff did a good job.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
No, I think the staff report's clear.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the Commission hereby unanimously approves the coastal development permit for the proposed development and adopts the findings set forth in this staff report. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Okay, and that'll take us to statewide federal consistency 9.
Yes, commissioners, you received a packet on number 9 that negative determinations, and I wanted to see if there were any questions on those. If not, we would move on to number 10, which is a proposal.
Let me just clear the record just to be sure. Is there's not any objections to finding concurrence with these negative determinations? Hearing none, a commission concurs.
Thank you. Item 10 is a proposal by the National Park Service for a consistency determination, and the staff is recommending approval. The motion is on page 9. I can go through and highlight, but I think it looks like there are no questions, or if there are questions, I'll answer them, but I can highlight the proposal.
In the spirit of Friday morning and the valuable purpose of this project, I move the commission concur with the consistency determination CD02707 that the project described therein would be fully consistent, thus consistent to the maximum extent practical with the enforceable policy of the California Coastal Management Program.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Kazian. Both the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Kinsey?
This is part of a larger watershed restoration program that the Park Service is undertaking as identified in those future projects, and I think it's a very positive move on their part.
Commissioner Kajian?
No, sir.
And is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this? Hearing none, the Commission unanimously concurs with the consistency determination CD-027-07 by MPS. Okay, thank you.
Now, last but not least, the permit regulations. And we realize it's Friday, and we will do our best to be as quick as possible. I'm here today with Madeline Cavallari at my left, our lead permit analyst, fee analyst on this project. And our objective with this project is to bring the commission's permit fees to a level comparable to the fees charged by local governments. The permit fees were last raised in 1991, and our fees are currently extremely low. The document we passed out to you this morning has a summary of what the our current fees are and what the proposed fees are. And in the staff report, there is a comparison chart that describes the fees that local governments charge. And Ms. Cavallari will go through and explain that to you in a moment. The written staff report that you have before you describes the history of the Commission's permit fees and highlights the legislative subcommittee's encouragement that the Commission increase its fees. I did want to remind you that at the present time, all the Commission's permit fees go to the Coastal Conservancy. Exhibit F in your staff report is a summary of the history of the Commission's permit fees and where they go. Our objective today is to get initial feedback from the Commission on the types of fees that we're proposing and to see any major areas that you think we've missed, any major direction you'd like us to look into before the next hearing. And then we need you to authorize us to go to the next step with the Office of Administrative Law process, and that motion is on page 3. And I'd like to tell you a couple things more before Madeline starts. And one of we went through and we analyzed, we spent a lot of work on these permit fees. It's a tedious, tedious process. And one of the things we tried to go through is to see places that the Commission and its staff do a lot of work where we are not charging. And two major components where we are not charging is for appeals, permit appeals, and we are not recommending that we charge for permit appeals, and project-driven LCP amendments. And you all know that you spend a lot of time on project-driven LCP amendments. We do not currently charge any fees to the developer or the county or city for project-driven LCP amendments. In order to do that, we have to have a statute change. And we did have a proposal in trailer bill language this year to include that provision. The trailer bill language was not included in the last package before the legislature. So, but there is wording available for that. So that may be something you want to discuss with us today. So now I'd like to have Ms. Cavallari go through very briefly the highlights of what the changes are.
Thanks, Susan. The Commission is required to follow the detailed rulemaking process, which is administered by the Office of Administrative Law. The Commission's authorization to commence the rulemaking process will allow staff to submit the initial rulemaking package to OAL so that the notice of proposed rulemaking can be published and the rulemaking process can begin. Once the notice of proposed rulemaking is published, a 45-day public comment period will begin, and this public comment period will include a public hearing at a Commission meeting. Staff expects, well, all of the public testimony regarding the regulations change to take place at this future meeting. The Commission may make changes to the proposed regulations today or following the future public hearing. Staff has four main goals for drafting the proposed regulations. These goals are to determine fees that reflect the amount of review required for each type of application, to determine fee amounts that are comparable to local governments in the coastal zone, to not burden homeowners and small business owners, and to create a fee schedule that is fair and simple to implement. The proposed amendments make four fundamental changes to the Commission's current filing fee regulations. The first change to the regulations is an increase in the fee amounts. A comparison of the current and proposed fee amounts can be found on the handout that was distributed this morning. The proposed fees are similar to the average local government fees in the coastal zone. However, it is important to note that the average local government fees found by staff and included in the staff report as Exhibit J are planning fees only and do not include the cost of local government's CEQA review. Therefore, it would make sense for the Commission's fees to be slightly higher than those of local governments to reflect the cost of environmental review required by CEQA and the Coastal Act. On the handout, you can see that small items such as waivers have increased a small amount, and large items such as industrial projects with development costs of over $100 million have been increased by a much larger amount. The second change to the regulations is the addition of four new fee categories, including fees for federal consistency certifications, boundary determinations, certain types of appeals, and permit exemptions. So the first new fee category is for consistency review. Under the Coastal Zone Management Act, the Commission is authorized to conduct consistency reviews of projects that require a federal license or permit and affect the coastal zone. The CZMA requires an applicant for such a permit to submit a consistency certification to the Commission. These certifications require a significant amount of Commission and staff time to review and require the same level of review as all other CDP applications. However, there is currently no mechanism for charging a fee for the Commission's review. Staff proposes to create a filing fee for these certifications. The fee amount would be the same as that for a CDP. However, fees for consistency review cannot be required until this regulation amendment is approved by NOAA's Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management for incorporation into the California Coastal Management Program. The second new fee category is for boundary determinations. Mapping staff regularly performs informal as well as formal boundary determinations, but currently these requests do not require a filing fee. Informal determinations are those that are simple to evaluate and require only a verbal response from Commission staff. Staff has proposed to keep these informal determinations free of charge. Formal determinations, on the other hand, can be quite complex, requiring many hours of staff's time and written notice to applicants. Staff has proposed a small fee for these formal boundary determinations. The third new fee category is for certain appeals. Staff has determined that it would be inappropriate to charge for appeals in the majority of cases because it could discourage public participation. However, there are two circumstances in which charging for an appeal would be appropriate because the project sponsor is also acting as the appellant. One is when a CDP for an energy or public works project is denied by a local government and the project proponent appeals that denial to the Commission. The proposed regulations establish a fee for appeals to the Commission pursuant to Section 30603A5 of the Coastal Act for a denial of a major works, public works project or energy facility. Also, the regulations include a filing fee for an appeal pursuant to Coastal Act Section 30602 for a denial by a local government of a CDP prior to certification of an LCP. Pursuant to Section 30602, all such denials may be appealed to the Commission. The fourth new fee category is for permit exemptions. Staff receives many requests for permit exemptions. In fiscal year 05-06, for example, there were 370 such requests. These requests often require many hours of staff time to research and document. Therefore, staff has proposed a small filing fee for exemptions that require written documentation. The third change to the regulations that staff is proposing is the addition of an automatic fee escalator. This fee escalator will allow the Commission to adjust its fees each year by the amount of inflation without having to go through the rulemaking process. It states that each year the new fees, as adjusted by the California Consumer Price Index, will become effective July 1st. If the amendment is adopted, staff would calculate the new fees after the Department of Industrial Relations publishes the annual index value and then would adjust the fee schedule that is issued to the public and posted on the Commission's website. Although future changes to the fee regulations will certainly be necessary, this automatic escalator will ensure that the filing fee revenue is increasing at least at the rate of inflation and that future fee increases will not be as substantial as the current one. The final change to the regulations proposed by staff is the addition of two new provisions for fee waivers or reductions. Currently, the Commission has the discretion to waive or reduce permit fees. Staff proposes to retain this provision as well as to add the possibility of a fee waiver or reduction for affordable housing projects and for green building when determined to be appropriate by the executive director of the Commission. To conclude, the Commission may vote today to authorize staff to commence the rulemaking process. An additional public hearing will take place at a future Commission meeting after the rulemaking process begins. The Commission may make changes to the proposed regulations today or throughout the rulemaking process. The motion can be found on page 3 of the staff report.
Yes, Ms. Hanch.
We're ready to hear questions.
Okay, very good. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the staff for a very, as you characterized it, a very involved process to come to the Commission today with the analysis that you've done and the recommendations you've done. So any of my questions are certainly not in a critical manner, but sort of an exploratory manner. And first, let me go back to the question. I have several questions, but first, let me go back to the question I asked in the hypothetical before. What is it that staff thinks we could do going forward to change the paradigm whereby a proportion of our fees come directly back to the agency as opposed to all of them going elsewhere?
Well, Commissioner Clark, in fiscal year 2004-05, the Legislative Analyst's Office, and we discussed a bit of that in the staff report, recommended that $5.8 million be taken out of the Commission's budget from the general fund, and that the Commission raise its permit fees to that level in order to offset general fund expenses and the money be put in the special fund. We objected to it at that point in time. We didn't object to raising the fees, but we objected to pulling our general fund allocation out and substituting it with the special fund for several reasons. One, our permit fees income is never consistent. This year it was $486,000. I just got that figure yesterday. It's been as high as almost $800,000. And if we're projecting a 4 to 5 time increase if the fees go as we propose. We can't run a budget where 1 year on a special fund allocation we have $3 million and the next year we have $1 million or $2 million. That's impossible.
No,
and I think you understand that.
That's under a premise that we did a substitution approach to this, and that's not what I'm suggesting.
And if we could be guaranteed that it wasn't a substitution and it was a special fund that was there that we could keep as to run the commission meetings or to give local governments grants or things like that, but wasn't a deduction from the general fund, that's a possibility. It's risky, risky.
Why is it risky?
Because anytime the Department of Finance and the legislature, and I think Commissioner Schellenberger can speak to this, when you see a special fund, they think, okay, you should live from your special fund. We have been working with the Department of Finance to say that if we do increase our fees, can there be an offsetting or essentially we get credit for the fact that we've contributed more money, and then that would go for augmentations. The concept is acceptable to them. We'll explore more your question and see different methods. They all have their drawbacks.
I hear you, and I appreciate that, but I think we have a fundamental defect in the way we budget for this commission, this is not attributable to our staff, but I don't think as one of the local government commissioners here that it's insurmountable. I think that we have to strategically think about how we can change this paradigm. How can we go effectively forward, taking into consideration what are the challenges and issues, and then put together a strategy to accomplish that. And I think there'd be a willingness on the commission's part, and I'm just speaking for myself, to form a subcommittee to work with staff on this matter. Because to me, there's a huge defect in the way we go about and the way we are funded as a state agency.
The majority of our funds come from the general fund. We also have a large portion of our funds that come from the federal funds, the general fund, and then we get reimbursements from Caltrans and other agencies. If we try to have our...
Big brother.
It always hurts to talk about fees.
Can we go on? Okay. Thank you.
Talking about money here, we have a few technical breakdowns.
Yeah.
I can see that. One of the issues, and I completely understand what you're saying, Commissioner Clark, and we welcome any suggestions, and we've been all grappling with more ways to get more income. When we had the legislative analyst report, which suggested that we raise the fees to $5.8 million, the fees would be really, really high if we tried to raise that amount of money way higher than local government fees. I think that the fees have to be a contribution to the operation of the commission, but some of the money has to come from the general fund. And I don't think you're saying that that's not the case, but we have to balance from multiple sources of income.
No, Here's another thought that comes to mind, and I turn to my other commissioners who are from local government here. In my city, it's been a longstanding practice on major projects to require the applicant to put forward a deposit fee with the city that is drawn upon for the actual expenses associated with pursuing the application and all the associated attended with cost. And that fee basically underwrites that. Now, I presume other counties and cities do the same thing, but even if they don't, what's wrong with thinking about a conception of a subset of applications on major projects where we basically, because you know we're devoting the kind of time and energy and cost, direct cost, staffing cost, having it being underwritten by the applicant. In fact, if I recall correctly, and I may be wrong, but I think Director Douglas a few years ago brokered a situation with some developers to actually have a pool of funds for expediting some of their project processing fees, recordation actions because of the time delays, because we have such a strain on our staff. So thinking out of the box, I think there are things we can do to help alleviate part of the cost of our staff, and here's one that comes to mind that we use in local government. Reaction to that.
You're talking about a full cost recovery where you
right.
bill back. We looked at that option. We'd have to completely change the structure of how we do things, add in more accounting staff to do it. It's a fairly in-depth, tedious sort of process. It's certainly an option.
Well, there's ways to do that, and I suspect if we could point you in the direction of local governments that have done it in a streamlined fashion that could make it less than a difficult implementation process.
We'll explore that more fully when we come back to you at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. And then on the area of appeals, the staff report this morning to the commission indicated that the two areas of intensive work that have been discovered in this review process were project-driven LCP amendments and appeals.
The ones that we are not currently charging
right.
for.
And what strikes me about appeals, and again, at the local, you know, when we're comparing what we do with local governments in the coastal zone, I will tell you, all appeals in my city have some fee associated with it because they extract some cost associated with it for staff and for the governmental body. Now, I think, I don't know if ruling out appeal fees, except in a minor subset, makes sense in today's time. Does it have a chilling effect on public participation? I don't think so. I think most members of the public are familiar with fees associated with appeals. They experience them at the local government. Should they be onerous? No. Should they be disproportionate? No. But I would, for one, not like to see us rule out appeal fees categorically.
Okay. Well, we can look at local government's appeal fees and let you know at the next meeting, too. But the large time sink for the commission and the staff with appeals is once it goes to a de novo hearing and then it is the commission's permit.
Right.
And you really can't charge a citizen local appellant for that. And the people who have their projects appealed are probably going to object to the fact that they didn't choose to have the appeal in front of the commission. So, but I would like to hear more from other commissioners about the concept of charging for appeals.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Kinsey, then Commissioner Vice Chair Neely, then Commissioner Blank, and then Commissioner Wan.
Thank you. I, too, appreciate the staff's report. It presented a lot of substantial research in a very understandable way. There are a few questions and comments that I have. I'll start with the appeals. I, too, had noted the appeal as something that I felt comfortable with acknowledging in our fee structure. So if we can find a way to do that, I don't have a problem that it would be a chilling effect. I was unable to understand how modest additions would be handled by this. If someone were to come in for adding a bathroom or a bedroom, where that gets picked up, is it just under the single-family piece? And if so, and you don't need to answer that right now, but if so, I've seen some pretty onerous fees attached to very modest additions in my own county, in our local coastal area, and I think we ought to perhaps consider that. Secondly, you know, we are trying to achieve affordable housing in a market-based approach by supporting second units. Second units in this situation are captured only under the definition of the residence, and I'm wondering if there isn't some value in thinking about second units a little bit differently. Third, we are seeing more and wanting to be supportive more of alternative renewable energy, solar arrays, photovoltaic issues, wind energy issues. I'm not sure, but it may benefit the commission to have some specific incentive-based approach to that. I didn't see anything specifically there about that. On page 9, the issue around CEQA, I think that the CEQA issue, given that you point out that we have a responsibility, even though lead agencies do the primary lifting on CEQA, we get involved in some significant review. I would be supportive of some fee-based approach if there is significant review required on a particular project to run CEQA, because it is so tedious to research and evaluate. A few other comments I would make is that when you look at the definition that we've created for the residence, including all of its accessory structures, decks, patios, garages, and so forth, 1,500 square feet evaporates pretty quickly. And so I would just question whether the 1,500 is the right number. I certainly would like to see us have some reward for modesty, and I would be proposing that we might want to reduce that to the eight times increase to like $2,000 instead of three, and I'd be comfortable supporting an increase for those homes that are over 10,000 square feet because they certainly can afford it if they can afford that much home. I also think that there's a value in supporting well-managed agriculture, and I didn't see anything in here around freestanding agricultural structures. When our ranching community comes in, we want to be supportive of them staying and investing in their agriculture when it's done in a way that's environmentally responsible. I also think that we're getting a little bit heavy-handed on the after-the-fact. You know, we went up, I think we went to 500% or something like that over our regular fee schedule, somewhere less than that, but still, you know, a punishment three times might feel good to me. Exemptions at $250 seems low for the value of an exemption. I mean, no, I don't know what that is, but it just struck me as a little bit low. And I would support legislation to achieve what BCDC now has regarding project-specific LCP amendments, allowing us to charge public agencies if they're coming in around a specific project. And then finally, when I looked at the different fee structures from the different communities, I noticed that, and I'm thinking about rural counties, I'm wondering if there would be some way to give the rural counties some kind of a factor of reduction in fees. I'm not a rural county, so it's not to the benefit of our county, but I wonder about these fees in some of the rural counties and whether there might be a way to say a county that has less than so many a population of so much might be handled differently. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kinsey. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Commission direct its staff to commence the rulemaking process for adopting amendments to sections 13055, 13169, 13255.0, 13255.2, and 13576, and adopting new sections 13255.1 of the Commission's regulations and recommend a yes vote. And if I get a second, I'd just like to speak to the motion.
Second.
It's moved by Vice Chair Neely and seconded by Commissioner Wan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, thank you. It's my understanding that we're just opening this process today and that there will be four areas that we're proposing amendments. One will be the increased fee amounts. The other will be new fee categories, new fees for federal consistency certifications, boundary determinations, and appeals, and then written exemptions from coastal development permits. And then we'll also be asking that there be an escalator clause, which would allow the Commission to update fees each year according to inflation without a whole rulemaking process having to be undertaken, and that we'd have two new provisions for fee reductions, one for affordable housing and one for green building. So we're sort of opening the door today for this process to take place, and for staff. Staff has to submit this, I guess, to the Office of Administrative Law. And I personally need some more time to look at all of these things, including the fee increases, and maybe we could have some sort of a status report before it's submitted. But I think this is a pretty big issue. It may streamline the process for us in the future, but we really haven't had any fee increases for probably about 16 years, I think. So anyway, we're just opening the door now to start the process, and we could have more discussion on this at future meetings.
Thank you, Vice Chair Neely. The seconder of the motion, Commissioner Wan.
I'm in agreement with Commissioner Neely. I just did want to touch on two particular issues. One has to do with, and they both have to do with the areas where we're not charging anything now. One is the project-driven LCP amendments, and I think that particularly since they're project-driven, there should be some sort of fee. I mean, I don't want the fee to go, obviously, to the local jurisdiction, but if they're project-driven, I would assume that the local jurisdiction will have a way to get those fees from the project proponent. I mean, therefore, we should be charging some fees for those.
On that, I just want to remind the Commission that we have to have a statute change to do that. So
understood. So that's a longer process.
We want to get the
right
sense from the Commission if that's something that you want us to push for a statute change.
Yeah. On the other area that concerns me is the charging of fees for appeals. The Coastal Act's very specific about the need to maximize public input. And it's very easy for us to sit here and say, well, it won't have a chilling effect. But in fact, it does have a chilling effect. There are a lot of people out there who care about these issues, and they don't have the money to be able to appeal it. And it would mean that this could have an effect on the public's ability to participate in the process. I recognize that there may be, and I haven't seen it over the years, an occasional individual who just files appeals all the time, but I haven't seen that. I would like to see that if that were the case, and I do believe that the staff under those conditions has the right to reject patently frivolous appeals, and they should do that. But where there's a legitimate basis for an appeal and a member of the public is acting basically in the interests of the Coastal Act, they should not have to pay a fee.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Commissioner Blank.
Great. I just want to compliment staff on a great paper. If I'd been getting this at the end of the term, I would have been grading it highly, but I would have marked it up with the following comments, so let me go through them. So I happen to agree with Commissioner Wan on the no fees for appeal. Just if you could just note that. I also believe psychologically it provides a chilling effect. Unless staff is suggesting we're inundated with appeals and we want to cut down the number, and then you want to make that argument, but to make that as a revenue source, I have to balance that with the free flow of having people feel comfortable coming to the Commission with issues, and I would not go there, my opinion. My second one is, and this is just process, but I think it's going to help us all make a much better document out of here. You do a great job in exhibits K on of bringing up other authorities' permitting issues, but this is a great example of swamping us with data and giving us no information. So I suggest that you just simply extract some of that data and make a comparison table so we could all understand whether we're in the range or not. I know that's what you're trying to do, but it's impossible from the mass of data for us to be able to look at this coherently and say, yes, we got it. This is within the range of everybody else. And that's number one.
Commissioner Blank, just so that you know, we did do our best to do that, which, and maybe we did make it clear enough, but that's Exhibit J, which is a local government survey where we summarized all the local government's minimum maximums, where we summarized all the other attached data. We just wanted to give you the chance to look at the raw data if you wanted to. But does Chart J do it for you?
Yeah, it would have been great to just see what the sources were for footnotes. Were they just the three that you used in the other appendices, or are they all? I mean, what was the source of the data? How many local governments?
There were five local governments that we used to compare.
Can you just footnote it on the bottom then? I'd be happy with that then.
Sure.
Next one, which just for me was kind of interesting, is if you take a look at Exhibit F, then this is maybe just another place where I missed this. This is the some of our permit fees and fines to date, but I would have hoped somewhere to see an extension of this table with what we would estimate our revenue would be under this new fee schedule. Is that somewhere, or am I missing that?
No, we did not put that in because we believe there'll be so many changes. Our estimate right now is 4 to 5 times increase, so it would be a multiplier of the about 500,000 by four. So $2 to $2.5 million would be the total.
Wow, that's I think that's pretty relevant for the commission and for the public, I'd love to see that. Just another comment, and then the last item. Which is my biggest one, which might, I don't know if now's the time for modification, Mr. Chairman, or I'll just note it. If my fellow commissioners remember the indemnification issue that's been coming up for the last 6 months, it happens to be that Exhibit A, page 6, if I remember correctly, is exactly what our executive director used to justify recovering indemnification for attorney's fees. It said, in addition to the above fees, the commissions may require the applicant to reimburse it for any additional reasonable expenses incurred in consideration of processing the permit application. And we used that as the justification that said attorney's fees were part of processing the application. I truly would like to see this amended to exclude single-family homes. I've been consistent about this. I think it's inappropriate to be using this clause to require single-family homeowners. I'm happy, personally, with all due respect to Commissioner Kruger, to have developers and large businesses be beholden to that section, but I just find it objectionable. And if we're going to continue to use that clause, and since we happen to have this open for rulemaking, that would be my objection on that one. And I don't know how my fellow commissioners want to deal with it now, or
I think we're going to deal with that one later. We said a month or so ago we'll rule on a committee in August, and you can make your input on this rulemaking and your concerns, etc. We're going to have a continuation of this, and we can discuss that if it's okay with you and others as far as the indemnification part at a future.
I'm just trying to understand what form does this come back to the commissioners again?
The proposal for the fee? Yeah.
No, the whole fee proposal.
You will have a full public hearing at either the October or November meeting?
Mm-hmm. At our November meeting.
Pardon me? October or November?
Okay.
I think that's the proper time you want to do that.
Just to note the objection.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm glad to hear that you support that I can pay more fees. That's good.
Absolutely.
Thank you. that comes under too much information, you know. Thank you. Commissioner Schallenberger.
Yeah, just a few things. As long as we're giving input and feedback to staff, I have a different position than Commissioner Kinsey on the after-the-fact permit. As we went before the legislature and argued why we needed more enforcement staff, it was because violating the Coastal Act in many, many areas is actually the cost of doing business. And for me, on this particular one, after-the-fact permits, where people have gone ahead and done development without benefit of a permit and then come and ask us for one, should be a huge... This is one where, to me, the permit should be a... should have not just a chilling effect, but a freezing effect, deep zero effect on the willingness to do that. So that's one. The other is, just to be sure that the commission gets enough opportunity to give feedback and direction prior to actually beginning to our public hearing and beginning the Office of Administrative Law process. That is an onerous process. I mean, once we kind of start the clock on that, if we make any changes at all, we go back and we have to do more public hearings and we start the clock again. And so even if this needs to come to us a few times before a public hearing, we've got to, by the time we finish a public hearing, we need to know that the direction that we've given staff and what's going into the Office of Administrative Law is we are not going to in any way tweak it or try and change it. And finally, just to kind of reiterate what staff said, but to be a little stronger about it, the legislature is adamant that we do this. They have been hounding us well before I was on the commission, back when I was staff to the legislature, about us raising fees. And so we need to, we have to do this, and we have to raise fees I think being comparable with local government, except when we have an argument to do otherwise, is a good benchmark. But we need to be strong and get this done rapidly, because for our biggest fans in the legislature, there is very little understanding and zero sympathy for the fact that we haven't already done this. So we have to move forward aggressively on it, and I appreciate staff's work.
Thank you, Commissioner Schallenberger. I'll save most of my stuff for the next hearing, but a couple brief comments. One would be, I think it would be very helpful as we go forward for the public. I think the staff did an excellent job in preparing this report, but it might be even better from a pure perspective of seeing these types of increase, which I'm not saying are unjustified. But I think that you could maybe on some of these indexes and tables, when you talk about the current fee, you could say the current fee since 1991 or 16 years ago. I think when a public person looks at that and other people that might have criticism to the multiplication look at some of these fees that are going up 7, 8, 10 times or greater, they're going to go, ah. But if you explain to them it's been 16, 17 years ago since you've had any fee increases, and I know you use the justification of other counties and cities that we look at, and I think that's good, but I think it's very, very important and very powerful that you put in there that this has not happened in many, many years, and it's way, way overdue, and I think that helps take a little bit of the bite out, number one. Number two, Commissioner Kinsey mentioned something about the square footage and changing on maybe some houses more on the high end. I don't have a problem with that either, but I think what works good for people that have larger homes or whatever and paying fees, they don't mind paying the larger fees, and sometimes agencies get more if you do it in a proportional direct nexus based on square footage. Because sometimes people, if you look at these fees where there's 10,000 square feet, maybe it should be double the person who's paying 5,000 square foot house. So there's a rationale. It isn't the fee they're paying, it's you're telling them they're not being discriminated against, but it was based on square footage, which a lot of fees developers are used to paying, whether they be industrial, commercial, residential. That if you tell them that this is tied to something, not because they can afford it, it's a wrong argument, but because It's direct, it's proportional, it's fair, and it's equitable. And that's something I would look at, and I think you might even get some more fees based on that type of approach. It's just something you could look at. Commissioner Clark?
I'll be brief since I've already spoken. Most of the suggestions that Commissioner Kinsey raised, I absolutely applaud. I think they're things to look into, and I particularly like the idea of incentives. Being a commission that values the environment and what we do, what we're also doing at local government is going to green government in terms of incentive. So I commend Steve for bringing that up. And I don't agree that we ought to lessen the proportionality, though, on after the fact. We see that in local government all the time, and quite frankly, we need to disincentivize parties from not going through a permit process up front. So I agree with Commissioner Schellenberger on that point. What came back to mind was the temporary sort of pooling of funds for expediting recordation fees that the executive director set up with a subset of applicants a couple of years ago that I think is now gone. Is there any thought been given to institutionalizing that as a mechanism that we could draw upon continuously? I would be interested in seeing something like that, because that could act as another form of augmentation of the ability to process things if we had an institutionalization of that kind of process. Thank you.
With that, any other commissioners want to weigh in? If not, there's a motion on the floor at this point for the let me have your thing. Maker of the motion, the seconder, have asked for a yes vote on directing staff to commence the rulemaking process. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves, directs the staff to commence the rulemaking process to revise sections 13055, 13169, 13255, 13255.2, and 1.13576 of and add 13255.1 to the commission's regulations. Thank you. Anything else? I know we have a couple public comment, but anything else before we go into public comment?
Just briefly, I really appreciate all the comments the commissioners made on the permit fees, and I welcome any phone calls or emails. If you think of things as you're between the commission meetings, it would be really helpful, because Commissioner Schellenberger is correct. The radical changes that we make later, the process is going to be longer. So if you have questions and you want us to look into things, just give me a call.
Okay, one brief. Commissioner Wan wants to add something.
I was just looking at this. I'm sorry to add this at the last second, and listening to the discussion about, you know, what Commissioner Kruger said about the based on a square footage. And one thing that concerns me, the fees for single-family residences, it says up to 4 single-family residences. There seems to me that there should be a category of 1 single-family residence. When somebody's coming in to build 1 1,500 square foot home, that's a whole different story than somebody who's coming in to build 3 or 4 homes. And the 1 single family homeowner building it, we may need another category to deal with that. And that's all, because I am looking at fairness here.
We'll make sure that's clear.
And just to clarify, the fees, if you came in to build 4 homes, then the fee would be multiplied by 4.
Understood, but I'm talking about the proportionality. If somebody who's building 1 single family home, it may be that he's building it on spec, but it also may be that he's just building a home for himself, and he's building 1 single family 1,500 square foot home for himself, and that's really different than somebody who's building many of them.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Anything else from staff on that?
No,
if not,
no, thank you.
Good job. Very
thank
good
you.
Job. Thank you. With that, we have two public comment speaker slips. Marsha Lilly, please. Ms. Lilly, 3 minutes. Could you speak into the microphone she gave?
First, can you hear me? No. I'd like to thank you for giving me, Honorable Chair and Coastal Commissioners, I'd like you to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before you. It makes me feel good as a citizen just to be able to get up here and express myself. This morning, I am going to speak, just make a couple of comments. My concern has to do with the Oceano Dunes SVRA. And I'm a resident in Oceano, but I have no economic interest there because I own no property. I'm here strictly from an ecological, human interest, and a citizen standpoint. The problem with Oceano Dunes SVRA, first of all, it's so different from the other SVRAs in the state of California in that it is conducted on a beach that has a natural preserve and is supposed to be protecting the snowy plover and the least tern nesting grounds. The state parks commissioner and people with the state parks claim that they can control and protect this area, but I'm here to just make a few comments about the fact that it would seem very impossible to control a place that is described in this California official state parks map as a place with 1,000 campsites, undesignated sites, each of which can house maybe 6 other campers, and there's no limit as to the size and amount of the vehicles. So if you figure 1,000 campsites 2 mile from state park rangers, and you think of control of the area and protection of the flora and fauna, that doesn't seem very possible. I have here 2 photos of the area which is beyond the SVRA, which shows that vehicles have gone. This is the Osaflaca Creek, not the Arroyo Grande Creek, which the vehicles run over anyway. And this shows that vehicles do cross that creek all the time and do wheelies and various things. I'd like to submit these to the commission. Also, I'd like to speak a little bit about fireworks and the fact that they're illegal on state land. That they're illegal on state land and they're illegal on natural preserve, and that the fire marshal and the sheriff there this 4th of July and the week previous to 4th of July were notified that there would be fireworks there, and they tried to control it and they couldn't. And I want to submit these tapes which show that the fireworks that were being exploded right in that area, which is the nesting area of the snowy plover and the least tern. So there is no way to control what goes on there, even though the state park tries to do a good job. I'm sure they do. They're doing the best they can. But what the conditions that exist there make it impossible to control. I even observed one time where they have put fences to protect the flora behind in the dunes on the beach part before you get to La Grande Tract and before you get to the natural preserve. They had actually protected that and had signs there. And at high tide, when the vehicles could not get on the beach, they actually brought bulldozers out and built a new road on the very land that they had signs saying they were protecting. So these are all honest observations of mine, and I just wanted to point out and bring a couple of things here to make you reconsider the idea that Oceano Dunes SVRA is not like the other SVRAs run by the state parks. It's on an ocean, and it is in a very delicate area ecologically, and thousands and thousands of campers go down there all during the year. I don't know how many. They say 2 million or something.
Ma'am, anyway, your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm submitting this.
Yeah. Pat Mullen?
Yeah.
3 minutes, sir.
No problem. It won't even take that. Good morning, Chairman Coor and Commissioners. Pat Mullen with PG&E. I thought you might appreciate an update on how the new trail opening went this morning. As of 8 o'clock this morning, we opened the North Ranch Point Buchon Trail to docent optional hiking, so it's the first time we've ever had the public allowed on the property without docent lead or any type of managed or docent-led access. It was a smooth opening on schedule at 8 o'clock. As of 9:30, we had about four dozen hikers that were out on the trail. It's a beautiful day out there today, and they seem to be enjoying themselves. The feedback's been positive. And so far, no issues or problems with access in and out or parking or any of the facilities. So I just thought you'd appreciate an update. I know you're ready to finish up today, but I thought you'd like to hear how that opening went. So it is open and seems to be working well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We're glad glad to hear that. And two last comments. One, thank the staff for the hard work this week. It was very long, and we appreciate all your support. And also would like to, on behalf of the commission, thank our friend and colleague, Commissioner Akajian, who did a yeoman's job in making us feel right at home here, et cetera.
And I'd like to thank the whales for showing up last night.
Yeah, he can send them back to SeaWorld now. Commissioner Akajian, I think, had them trapped out there, you know. Thank you. And thank everybody. And again, San Francisco, next meeting. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, does that mean next year we're back in San Luis, maybe sometime June, July, August?
Thank you.